It is the week of the second major of the year, the 108th PGA Championship, and we at Musings on Golf are excited to preview Aronimink Golf Club outside of Philadelphia with Jeff Kitty, who likely knows it better than anyone. I'm your host, Kelly Elbin, along with executive producer Jenna Self, and shortly you'll hear the interview I conducted with Jeff, now in his 19th year as PGA of America head professional at Aronimink. It's a golf course that the legendary golf course architect Donald Ross once described as his masterpiece. It features 180 bunkers, sloping, treacherous putting surfaces, and a number of really terrific golf holes that will test the field of 156 players in the only all-professional major championship. Aronimink is interesting, folks. It hasn't hosted a major since Gary Player captured the 1962 PGA Championship there. It's undergone several tweaks and updates, the latest being in 2017, a remodel from the very popular design team of Gil Hands and Jim Wagner, both of whom live close to Aronimink. It's a par 70 layout. It's been stretched to about 7,300 yards. And what Hands and Wagner did is really bring the bunkers and the greens back to Mr. Ross's original vision. I mentioned about standout holes. You've got four very strong par fours starting on 1, 2, 3, and 4. Very strong par fours starting on 10, 11, 12, and 13. So those first two rounds, based on where you're teeing off on a particular day, that golf course is a tough one right from the start. The 13th hole, Kerry Haig, the longtime setup guy for the PGA of America, I'm sure one of the days he move the tees forward. The 13th, the par 4, can be a drivable hole. The 18th, a really good finishing hole, 490 yards, par 4. Large terrace green, a lot of options for pin placements on 18. But what it really comes down to on this golf course, its defense, are the putting services. And let's hear what two-time PGA champion Rory McIlroy has to say.
You know, the greens seem to be the big defense and the big talking point of the golf course. You know, they can really tuck the pins away with some of these slopes on the greens. But if you get yourself above the hole or you start to short side yourself, you can get yourself into some tricky spots. So, you know, keeping the ball below the hole and really, yeah, it's a course where you can be super aggressive off the tee. And then you got to, you know, there's a little more strategy and a little more thought going into the greens.
It's going to be an opportunity to bomb it off the tee for a lot of those players. And the greens will be the ultimate test of who prevails. And it's shown in recent years. Keegan Bradley won the BMW Championship in 2018. The golf course was very wet, but he was among top putting leaders that week. So it really will come down to who putts the best. Before I give my pick, just a few personal notes. You know, I had the good fortune of working for the PGA of America for a number of years, and for 9 years, I sat next to the very best players of that time, whether Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson or Rory McIlroy, in moderating press conferences that you might have seen on Golf Channel. So the PGA Championship is very special to me. And I mentioned earlier, it's the only all-professional major. And I've always felt that that's the hook that the PGA of America has to hang its hat on. It's not the Masters. It's not the National Open. It's not the oldest Open. And I do hear a lot about it's the fourth major and so forth. And I get that. But I also know that winning the PGA Championship is as good as it's going to get for a lot of guys. And somebody this week is going to be a major champion, whether that's for the first time or adding to it. Keep in mind, between Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, they have won 4 of the last 5 major championships. And while I expect guys like Cameron Young to play well this week, I expect Matt Fitzpatrick to play well this week. In selecting my winner, I kind of am deferring to my friend Bob Herrig, the senior golf writer for Sports Illustrated. Bob is a recent guest on Musings on Golf to promote his new book, Tiger versus Jack, Golf's Great Debate. I reached out to Bob. I said, Bob, who do you think is going to win and why? And his comments here, I pretty much echo. From Bob Herrig, his pick, Scottie Scheffler. I know this sounds too easy, but this has been a strange year for Scheffler, who after winning in his first start of the year, has had a run of odd poor starts and, for him, frustrating results. And yet, He has three straight second-place finishes coming to the PGA, including a one-shot deficit to Rory McIlroy at the Masters, where he trailed by 12 after 36 holes. With a week off to reset while the others were in Charlotte, I look for Scheffler to have it all sorted out at Aronimink. Let's close here with Jeff Kitty. It's a very proud time for any PGA of America professional to host a major event, a big-time event at his or her course. But for Jeff, this is his organization, the PGA of America, which runs the PGA Championship, and he couldn't be more proud. Jeff is kind of the consummate golf professional in many respects. We talk about his background in golf, how he landed the job at Aronimink, a really good man, and has done a terrific job there. You don't hold on to a job at a place like Aronimink coming up on 20 years unless you're really good at what you do. And we also discuss in the course of our interview one of the great amateur golfers of all time, Jay Sigel, who was a longtime Aronimink member until Jay passed away in the spring of 2025. And as I mentioned to Jeff, and as I'll say here, Hal J. Sigel is not in the World Golf Hall of Fame. Hal Vinnie Giles, another great amateur, is not in the World Golf Hall of Fame, is completely beyond my understanding. Before we kick it over to our two corporate partners, just a reminder, we've got two episodes this week. We've got a special episode on Thursday with another PGA of America professional, Sarah Bush, the Director of Golf Relations at Folds of Honor. We're going to get caught up in everything that that wonderful organization is doing. May and Memorial Day is a big time for them. Again, download, subscribe, go to Apple Podcast and Spotify, anywhere that you find your favorite podcast, which of course is Musings on Golf, and listen to us there. You'll hear right after this from William and Harry Golf and the Friars Golf Club, from Jeff Kitty, the terrific PGA of America professional. Our friends at William and Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William and Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. Planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Rory McIlroy looks to grab his second straight major title of 2026, while Scottie Scheffler aims to raise the Wanamaker Trophy for the second consecutive year as the 108th PGA Championship tees off Thursday at Aronimink Golf Club outside of Philadelphia. And who better to talk about the challenges that stand before the strongest field in major championship golf? The Jeff Kitty, now in his 19th year as the PGA head professional at Aronimink, in addition to being a major part of the Aronimink family, Jeff has also been honored by his PGA of America family, having been named the 2023 PGA Golf Professional of the Year. Jeff Kitty, first of all, welcome to Musings on Golf. And second, I have to think you and your staff are thrilled to have the week of the 2026 PGA Championship finally here.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I mean, I remember back when we signed the contract for these events, and both the KPMG Women's PGA and the PGA Championship, and it felt like forever away. And here we are, Championship Week starting.
Yeah, and I know that for the PGA of America, the Aronimink, I believe, is the first to host the Senior PGA Championship, the KPMG Women's, and now the PGA Championship. So you've got all three. Hey, Jeff, for you and your staff, I know you oversee a large staff at Aronimink. When did it start to get really serious for you and your team in planning and really diving deep into the preparations for the week of the PGA Championship?
I guess it depends on what aspect of it. You know, we've been doing behind the scenes planning for several years, and the golf course changes, you know, which weren't extensive, but, you know, those started, a couple years ago. But, you know, the real detailed planning work and the infrastructure and the staff buildup and all that stuff, probably about a year ago, all of that stuff really kicked in.
But let's talk about the golf course. It has been a while. The 1962 PGA Championship was the last time a major championship was held. Gary Player won, finished 2 under par. Jeff, give us a sense of what type of test the best golfers in the world should expect from Aronimink when everything gets underway on Thursday.
You know, I'd say it's a traditional Northeast, you know, Parkland style golf course. You know, a golf course from the golden age of design, you know, with a Donald Ross design. You know, Philadelphia is known for their own school of design. Obviously, Donald Ross was not from Philadelphia, but he had an impact in this region too. So a very classic golf course. And I think the players, every time they've been here, be it the three other tour events that we've had, or the Senior PGA or the KPMG, have enjoyed playing, you know, such a classic Northeast golf course. So, you know, it has a lot of very traditional Donald Ross elements, but it was also a later Donald Ross design that it's definitely not like any of the New England Donald Ross courses, you know, like an Essex or something like that either. It's different than that.
Right. And Jeff, you've got a real nice variety of length of holes and different types of holes with a lot of character, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we definitely have good variety from, you know, could have a drivable par four if Kerry Hague, our chief championships officer, if he chooses to set it up that way, to a 540-yard par four. You know, a very gettable par five in our 16th hole to a 605-yard par five ninth hole. The par threes from 100, and, you know, they could play number five as short as 150 yards if they wanted to 245-plus yards on number eight. So we've got a lot of variety for sure.
Can you talk a little bit about, I understand you've got a fair amount of greens that are with a lot of undulation. Are there particular holes where that undulation really is pronounced, really stands out?
Oh, for sure. I think the holes that if somebody came here for the first time, the greens they'd probably remember the most would be our 10th and 11th. The 10th is a good long par four this week. It's about 475 yards. But the green has this swale that runs diagonally through it from left to right. It just creates all these really interesting plateaus. And the green is one of the ones that's really raised up out of the ground. A lot of our greens kind of sit naturally into the surface, you know, the existing surface. But this one really pops up out of the ground. It's actually the only green on the golf course that doesn't have a greenside bunker. But our 11th green is the green that, you know, can pitch fits to our players.
Are they large greens, smaller greens? Is there a general feel in terms of the total size of most of the greens?
No, I think they'd definitely be considered larger greens. You know, Gil Hans and his team, you know, expanded them back out their original footprints. They're actually original greens. They're the original fill pads, you know, that opened in 1928. So they are old greens, and they're all 18 of them are in their original locations. A couple of them had a couple of wings that were bit into by a couple of architects through the years, but have been restored to their original fill pads and size. All 18 greens is pretty unusual for a golf course this old.
Yeah, very much so. Gil was brought in what year, Jeff? When did Gil come in? And what were his charges, the charge to really restore it to as Mr. Ross originally designed it?
Yeah, Ron Pritchard did a master plan for us in the late 90s and then did some work and really helped restore a lot of the Ross roots. And then Gil was brought in. We needed to redo our bunkers. And in that time from when Ron did his great work to Gil coming on board to doing work, we lost a lot of our trees, a lot of our hardwood trees, our deciduous trees, our red oaks. And there's a blight in the area that's been killing our red oaks for, you know, more than 30 years. So the golf course had opened up the corridors between the holes. So the bunker work that Ron did was really based on Ross's drawings, not what was built. And as these corridors were opening up, it was Gil's feeling that the golf course wasn't quite at its full scale. You know, some of the bunkers that Ron had put in as Ross had drew kind of looked small and out of place in some of the places. So Gil restored the golf course to putting it back in. And Ron didn't have the aerial photography that Gil had to work with, too, that really showed what was built. And Gil felt strongly, you know, we have an 8mm video that you can actually find on YouTube of Donald Ross on site. You can see the golf court or the clubhouse in the background. So Gil felt pretty strongly that what was built was what, you know, Ross had approved and intended, even though it was different than what he had drawn. You know, Gil says all the time that they make field decisions that is different from what they had drawn and originally intended, that you make a decision out there once you start moving earth, that you change things. So Gil recommended to putting back in these clusters of bunkers instead of just, you know, where Ross had drawn one, we have mm-hmm. a cluster of two to four sometimes. So it looks like more bunkers. It's effectively kind of the same complex, but much bigger, and really helped restore the scale between the holes and when you're looking at the holes.
It's a pretty cool process,
so
isn't it?
Gil did that work in 2015 and little bit into 16. So it was reclamation of green space that Ron had actually recommended to do. We didn't do because it was too close to the 2003 senior PGA. So we opted not to do it back then. I wasn't part of the club then, but they opted not to do it then because it was too close to the senior PGA. So what Gil had recommended was in complete agreement with what Ron had recommended. Then the bunker work that Gil recommended, we added some width back to the golf course that went with reclaiming the scale of the golf course too. And we added some length in there too.
So par 70, and it'll play to what total length? If you need to go from the tips.
7390. Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, Keegan Bradley won the BMW Championship, part of the FedEx Cup in September of 2018. I know you had a lot of rain that week. He beat Justin Rose in a playoff. Rory, who I mentioned, finished fifth. It's really the only time that players of this era have played the golf course. Does the golf course, in your opinion, favor a particular type of player at the elite level?
You know, I've gotten that question a lot as we've led into this championship. And I think if you look through the years of the events that we've had, you know, starting with Gary Player to the two tour events we had in 10 and 11, and then Keegan in the BMW in 18, I think you look at the winners with, you know, Nick Watney, Justin Rose, Gary Player, and then Keegan Bradley that you mentioned. I think it's not necessarily the longest hitter. You know, none of those guys, I mean, even though I'm so impressed with how far Justin Rose hits it as a 45-year-old player, he's unbelievable. But he's not Rory McIlroy or Bryson DeChambeau long, but he's definitely long. But I think there are all those players I've kind of put in the all-around good players, and particularly really good iron players like Justin Rose and Keegan. But I think that's what it lends to. I think you could be somebody that's not the longest hitter and win here. We're not going to be the longest PGA Championship by, you know, definitely at 7390, but par 70, you know, helps make it a little bit longer. But I think really good iron players that can get into the right pockets of the greens. I said we have large greens, and we kind of have greens within greens that you need to get into the right area of those greens to have your best scoring opportunities.
Jeff, we're learning so much about Aronimink Golf Club. Really appreciate your time. Let's take a short break, hear from our friends at William & Harry Golf, and we'll be right back with you. At William & Harry Golf, comfort meets purpose. Through their care campaign, William & Harry is partnering with charities to give back, donating a portion of every qualifying sale to support your cause. Enhance your next fundraiser with William & Harry customized golf shoes, auction packages, or exclusive giveaways. Crafted from fine deer skin, calf skin, and exotic leathers, William & Harry Golf Shoes offer all-day comfort from the course to the clubhouse in vibrant, eye-catching colors. Learn more at williamandharry.com or email info@williamandharry.com. William & Harry, style with a mission. So pleased to be joined by Jeff Kitty, now in his 19th year as the PGA head professional at Adirondack Golf Club, located west of downtown Philadelphia and the site of this week's 108th PGA Championship. That's a lot of PGA championships, Jeff. And I know how the pride that you feel as a member of the PGA of America to be the host professional this week. It's got to be just a very wonderful feeling. You mentioned Kerry Haig earlier, who's been the setup guy for the PGA of America for many years. It's your organization. You've got the low 20 club professionals who just qualified out of Bandon Dunes to be part of the field. It must be a very proud week for you and your team. Yeah, very much so. Gil was brought in what year, Jeff? When did Gil come in? And what were his charges, the charge to really restore it to as Mr. Ross originally designed it?
Yeah, Ron Pritchard did a master plan for us in the late 90s and then did some work and really helped restore a lot of the Ross roots. And then Gil was brought in. We needed to redo our bunkers. And in that time from when Ron did his great work, to Gil coming on board to doing work, we lost a lot of our trees, a lot of our hardwood trees, our deciduous trees, our red oaks, and there's a blight in the area that's been killing our red oaks for more than 30 years. So the golf course had opened up the corridors between the holes. So the bunker work that Ron did was really based on Ross's drawings, not what was built. And as these corridors were opening up, it was Gil's feeling that the golf course wasn't quite at its full scale. Some of the bunkers that Ron had put in as Ross had drew kind of looked small and out of place in some of the places. So Gil restored the golf course to putting it back in. And Ron didn't have the aerial photography that Gil had to work with, too, that really showed what was built. And Gil felt strongly, we have an 8mm video that you can actually find on YouTube of Donald Ross on site. You can see the golf court or the clubhouse in the background. So Gil felt pretty strongly that what was built was what, Ross had approved and intended, even though it was different than what he had drawn. Gil says all the time that they make field decisions that is different from what they had drawn and originally intended, that you make a decision out there once you start moving earth, that you change things. So Gil recommended to putting back in these clusters of bunkers instead of just, where Ross had drawn one, we have mm-hmm. a cluster of two to four sometimes. So it looks like more bunkers. It's effectively kind of the same complex, but much bigger, and really helped restore the scale between the holes and when you're looking at the holes.
It's a pretty cool process.
So Gil did that work in 2015 and little bit into 16. So it was reclamation of green space that Ron had actually recommended to do. We didn't do because it was too close to the 2003 senior PGA. So we opted not to do it back then. I wasn't part of the club then, but they opted not to do it then because it was too close to the senior PGA. So what Gil had recommended was in complete agreement with what Ron had recommended. Then the bunker work that Gil recommended, we added some width back to the golf course that went with reclaiming the scale of the golf course too. And we added some length in there too.
So par 70, and it'll play to what total length? If it goes from the tips,
7390. Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, Keegan Bradley won the BMW Championship, part of the FedEx Cup, in September of 2018. I know you had a lot of rain that week. He beat Justin Rose in a playoff. Rory, who I mentioned, finished fifth. It's really the only time that players of this era have played the golf course. Does the golf course, in your opinion, favor a particular type of player at the elite level?
I've gotten that question a lot as we've led into this championship. And I think if you look through the years of the events that we've had, starting with Gary Player to the two tour events we had in 10 and 11, and then Keegan in the BMW in 18, I think you look at the winners with, Nick Watney, Justin Rose, Gary Player, and then Keegan Bradley that you mentioned. I think it's not necessarily the longest hitter. You know, none of those guys. I mean, even though I'm so impressed with how far Justin Rose hits it as a 45-year-old player, he's unbelievable. But he's not Rory McIlroy or Bryson DeChambeau long, but he's definitely long. But I think there are all those players I've kind of put in the all-around good players, and particularly really good iron players like Justin Rose and Keegan. But I think that's what it lends to. I think you could be somebody that's not the longest hitter and win here. We're not going to be the longest PGA Championship by, you know, definitely at 7390, but par 70, you know, helps make it a little bit longer. But I think really good iron players that can get into the right pockets of the greens. I say, you know, I said we have large greens, and we kind of have greens within greens that you need to get into the right area of those greens to have your best scoring opportunities.
So pleased to be joined by Jeff Kitty, now in his 19th year as the PGA head professional at Aronimink Golf Club, located west of downtown Philadelphia and the site of this week's 108th PGA Championship. That's a lot of PGA Championships, Jeff. And I know how the pride that you feel as a member of the PGA of America to be the host professional this week. It's got to be just a very wonderful feeling. You mentioned Kerry Haig earlier, who's been the setup guy for the PGA of America for many years. It's your organization. You've got the low 20 club professionals who just qualified out of Bandon Dunes to be part of the field. Must be a very proud week for you and your team.
Yeah, I'm proud for the team. I'm proud for our Philadelphia section. I'm proud for our members and our club. You know, the PGA Championship hasn't been in Aronimink since 1962, like you said, but it hasn't been in Philadelphia since 1962. So I think we feel as a region that, you know, maybe we're a little overdue to get this back, but we're really excited about it for sure. And as a PGA member, I mean, how great is it that I get to, the club that I get to drive into every day is now hosting our championship. So it's an incredible honor, and I feel very fortunate.
Your dad, David, was also a golf professional and as my understanding, a sales representative for both Arias and Izod, if you will, back in the day, right?
Yeah. He played college golf, and right out of college, he was a golf professional. One of his assistant pro jobs, he worked for a gentleman in Rochester, New York, where I'm from. He was that professional's first assistant, and I was that professional's last assistant. Kind of a cool little story, but so he was in the golf business. He was an assistant pro for probably 5 years, I think, and then went on to be a sales rep for some of the best companies in golf at that time. You know, golf merchandising wasn't then what it is today, but he was fortunate enough to work for some great companies and some great people.
And Jeff, not a bad way to grow up as a kid in the Rochester area. I understand you and your buddies rode bikes to play at a local muni. You got a lot of fun golf in. It was a pretty good youth growing up in that part of the country, huh?
Yeah, super fortunate. You know, we grew up in kind of in the sticks. It's a much more populated area now than when we grew up. I mean, we were dressed up if we had a new Carhartt or a new flannel. And my dad was selling Izod, so I kind of stuck out like a sore thumb wearing my crocodiles. But you know, we lived pretty close to a family owned golf course, and when the Dianetti family first bought it, it was 9 holes. It's now 63 holes. They were great people, and they treated us as kids. I said on either side of me, I had a family of 5 boys on one side, and the other side had 3 boys and a girl. And my sister was younger than me, so I was hanging out with older boys all the time, and I could have gotten into a lot of trouble, but I think golf kept me from getting in a lot of trouble, because we were at the golf course probably from the age of 10. You know, until we had driver's license, you know, 16, 17 years old, we were there every day, and they gave us, you know, they made us work. They didn't give us jobs. They told us we were there too much not to be working, but we did all different parts of the golf operation, from washing carts and working in the snack shacks to mowing greens and raking bunkers. So, I mean, we did everything, and it was an incredible way to grow up, for sure. I look back on some of my fondest memories, and the Dianetti family played a big role, and especially Mr. Dianetti, who is the owner. I mean, he taught us how to work hard, but he also gave us the opportunity to fall in love with a game that my friends and I still love.
What's the name of the club? And by the way, before you answer that, to grow from 9 holes to 63 holes, they've obviously done some great things over the years.
How about they never borrowed a dollar from the bank?
What?
Yeah, amazing. They're an amazing family. Mr. Dianetti was an incredible guy. a great business owner, you know, and ran a public golf course that was, you know, provided access to our community for a lot of people. You know, so it was incredible. I mean, when they bought it, it was 9 holes. They built the second 9 holes a couple years after that, so they could have 18 holes. And then we were 15 years old, probably 14, 15 years old when they started building the third 9, and then it just kept going. So it was Victor, New York. It was called Victor Hills Golf Club.
That's terrific.
It still is called Victor Hills Golf Club.
Yeah, you mentioned about your dad working. Was it Jim Merva who your dad worked for and then who you eventually worked
for? No, it was a gentleman named Dennis Bradley.
Dennis Bradley, yeah. So talk a little bit, if you would. Mentoring is such a big part of the life of a really good PGA professional. Look, I'm the son of a guy who was the head professional at Burning Tree outside of Washington. He was mentored and went on and had a number of his assistants became head professionals and directors of golf. Sounds like sort of the same path of people who mentored you, Jeff Kitty, and then you set others on the same road.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was a great place to grow up as a kid, and it was a great place to start my career. I worked for people that genuinely cared about me and my start in the business, and I worked for 3 professionals in Rochester, Dennis being the first one. I worked in the bag room through high school. You know, after I got a driver's license, I worked at Locust Hill as a backroom employee, and then my first assistant job. And then Dennis retired, and a good friend of mine, Steve Barber, who I didn't know then, but got the job. And I worked for Steve for a couple years. Steve and I are still dear friends. And then I got the opportunity to work for Jim Merva at Monroe Golf Club. And, it really was, you know, kind of set me up for my career, I say. I worked for great people prior to that, and I learned a ton. But Jim was the kind of pro that I really wanted to be. How he ran the shop, how he ran his tournaments. He loved to play. He played a lot, taught a lot. I mean, he just did everything. And I still, you know, hope that that's what I'm doing, just kind of doing a lot of everything. And super well-rounded golf pro that members just loved. They just revered. I mean, when he retired, the retirement party was incredible. So I worked for Jim for 3 years before I moved down to Philadelphia. I got to work 1 year at Pine Valley Golf Club for Charlie Rowdenbush, which was, I kind of almost look at it as finishing school now. I felt pretty well equipped. I didn't realize how big the golf world was until I left Rochester. I really only knew. I had worked in Florida for a few winters too for a gentleman named Steve Waugh, and that was terrific too. But, you know, going to work at Pine Valley, you're exposed to a lot, some of the, you know, most powerful people in golf. So that was an incredible opportunity, which led me to my first head professional job at a club called Applebrook Golf Club that Gil Hans designed. It is a Gil design. So I was part of opening that from 2001, until the start of 2008 before I came over here to Aronimink. So, really, really fortunate. And, you know, I'm friendly with everybody that I work for. Dennis has passed away, but, I think he'd be proud to have followed my career to this point for sure. But I'm really proud that, you know, all those people that I work for I are still dear friends of mine that I stay in touch with.
Go back to the golf course a little bit. You talked about a few of the holes, 10 and 11 you mentioned. Is there a recognized signature hole at Aronimink? And particularly, Jeff, down the stretch, say from, you know, late in the back nine, are there holes that are going to be really key to you know, determining the winner of this year's PGA Championship?
Yeah, as far as a signature hole, I mean, I think we have, you know, something like 11's kind of a very picturesque hole since Gil did his work. I mean, the bunkering is just incredible. You know, 3 sets of clusters on the right, a set on the left. These really cool bunkers that sit below the green, and then some bunkers that are behind the green in the hillside. It's just an incredible hole to look at from the tee. As far as playing, I don't really love that phrase for holes. I think we have a lot of holes, but I get asked a lot, you know, what's going to be a pivotal hole for the finish. Yeah, sure. I really like the closing stretch. I think it's going to be it really creates some drama, and be very compelling with the possibility of Carey setting up 13 as a drivable par 4 if he chooses. He has that ability. Then 14 would be a long par 3 that has, you know, a lot of, you know, there could be a hole location that's kind of a gather hole location where it can create birdies, but there's also hole locations that can really challenge the players and really repel balls. 15 is our longest par four at about 540, 545 yards. So a monster par four that'll be followed by a very gettable par five, where they'll be hitting mid irons into the green, probably, if they keep it in the fairway. Then a very long par three, 230, 235 yards over water, the 17th hole, but could also be set up shorter with a really challenging hole location that could bring the water into play too. And then 18 will be a good stern par four with about 490 yards uphill. So I think the balance coming in of very scoreable holes and possibly eagle opportunities with 13 and 16 with some strong holes in there too, just really gives it balance.
Jeff, what's the hole you mentioned that could be set up by Kerry Hegg as a drivable par four? What hole is that?
13.
13.
13, yeah. Kind of starts that closing stretch of the last six holes.
Wrapping up a terrific round of golf, if you will, with Jeff Kitty, the outstanding PGA head professional at Aronimink Golf Club. Jeff, we have used the word professional a lot in this conversation, and rightly so. This is the only all-professional major championship, the PGA championship. But Aronimink, in fact, lost one of the great amateur golfers of all time in April of last year with the passing of Jay Sigel. What a record. And by the way, how Jay Sigel is not in the World Golf Hall of Fame, I'm not sure. All he did was win the U.S. Amateur, the British Amateur, the U.S. Mid-Amateur, competed on 9 Walker Cup teams. He's the only golfer to win the U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Mid-Amateur in the same year, and that was in 1983. Jeff, please give a sense of what Jay meant. He was a member at Aronimink, what he meant to the club, and if to you, you to you personally.
Yeah, I'll add on a couple of things in there. I mean, you know, I did a night with him a couple months before he passed, and we dedicated a room in the club to Jay, and I've known him, you know, for 20 years, and I knew a lot of this stuff. But as I was preparing, there were a couple of things that I didn't know. You know, he was a 9-time Walker Cup player, 9 years or 9 Walker Cup teams in a row. But he was also the playing captain in 83 and 85. And I just thought that's when playing captains stopped occurring. I thought, you know, we must have had playing captains. There hadn't been a playing captain since the 50s, and there hasn't been one since. So that's how special, you know, Jay was for amateur golf and for golf in Philadelphia and, you know, across the country. I mean, we just had an event the other night at the club. John Riley wrote a book on Jay. I think it's called The Last Amateur, if I'm getting that right. And we had about 150 people here to do a book signing, and Mr. Ridley from Augusta National was here to be the keynote speaker for it. It was incredible, and it was great. You know, about 1 year since his memorial service, that we had another celebration of Jay and his career, and we had Buddy Marucci here, and we had a gentleman here who beat Jay in the finals of the U.S. Junior Am, Charlie McDowell from Wilmington Country Club, and Jim Holcrief was here, a past U.S. Mid-Am champion. So he meant a great deal to Aronimink. This was his club. I mean, he was a member here for more than 50 years. I mean, he was a huge part of the club. He was a huge part of Philadelphia golf and Philadelphia sports, for that matter. And we miss him for sure. I know he would have enjoyed this week with the championship. So, yeah, we miss him.
Yeah, and I'm sure some of our listeners will remember Jay from his time on the Senior PGA Tour, where he had quite a bit of success. But really, the dominant years were as an amateur. When guys decided, let's be honest, a lot of guys just decided at that time to stay. Vinnie Giles to stay as an amateur, and those, you know, that's faded obviously with the purses and the money being so big in professional golf. But boy, the skill level of Jay Sigel was off the charts.
Yeah, he was winning these in his mid to late 30s. You know, this run that he went on, and he was you know, making the cut at the Masters. He finished low amateur 3 times at the Masters and twice in the U.S. Open. He was doing this while he was running a business and raising a family. He wasn't like he was just out of college. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I don't think, you know, Mr. Ridley said it the other night, we won't see this again. You'll see some mid-amateurs playing in the Walker Cup. I think we've been strong with that, with some of the mid-ams that have been playing, but you're not going to see this kind of record again. I mean, first of all, the kids are just too good, but it's just too hard. It's just too hard to do it all. And he was incredible. And thank you for saying that you think he should be in the Hall of Fame, because there's several of us who agree with you.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, Mr. Host Professional, how about a prediction for the winning score this week? And before you give that, again, it was 1962. It was a long time ago. Gary Player beat Bob Golby by a shot, finished at 2 under par. Par 70 golf course, Jeff Kitty. What might we expect? What should we expect if the weather doesn't get out of hand, if it's a good solid week, what kind of winning score should we expect?
Yeah, I think if we have some firmness, if we can keep dodging rain, which we have for the most part, if we can have some firmness, I think we'll be in the 11, 12 under par range. If it's soft, I mean, these guys, you know, the commercial says these guys are good, and they're just that good. If it's soft and they can fire at flags, they do. I mean, a lot has changed since 1962. I mean, players would hit 5 irons into our first hole, and we had one of the tour players out here this morning for a practice round, and he's hitting the sand wedge into the first hole. So I mean, it's just a different game. So we won't be 2 under par. I know that these guys are just too good, but I'm one that. To me, the score doesn't matter to me. It's about how compelling it is down the stretch. I mean, yep. Valhalla a couple of years ago was 20 under par, and I was inside the ropes walking as a rules official that Sunday, and it was electric. And yes. Watching somebody birdie the last hole to win the tournament, I think, is to me more compelling and memorable than necessarily if it's 10 under par or 20 under par. To me, that I think the most of the sports fans feel that way. You know, we all want the golf course to challenge and be great. That's for sure. But, to me, it's about the story of the players and what they're doing.
Yeah, no question about it. Jeff Kitty, thanks for all you do at Aronimink in particular and in general in growing the game. Wishing you and your team the very best this week. It's going to be a great PGA Championship. As you said, as a city, in a city that really is starved and ready to show up for a major event.
Yeah, I know the city has supported it so well. Ticket sales were incredibly aggressive in how fast they sold out. Hospitality, I mean, everything has set, new records for the PGA of America. So I'm really proud with the community and how much they've supported it. Volunteering, we could have filled the volunteer roles 3 times, and that's 3,500 people. So the city is excited. We're kind of the kickoff of a great summer in Philadelphia with sports and the 250th celebration of the country. So it's an honor for us to kind of kick off this celebration for the summer.
And it was an honor to talk with Jeff Kitty. I have a lot of respect for him and what PGA of America professionals do. I know this is a very busy week for Jeff and wish him the very best next week. As we look back on the 108th PGA Championship, we'll be joined by Rex Hoggard of Golf Channel. Rex is will give us some great insights, I'm sure. I also talked to Rex about the interview that he conducted a month or so ago with Gary Woodland, which I found to be very forthright and very emotional. Looking forward to spending time with Rex Hoggard as we recap the 108th playing of the PGA Championship. Enjoy golf's second major of 2026. I know I will. I know Janice Self will. And for her, I'm signing off. Kelly Elbin, once again, thanking you for joining us on Musings on Golf.